That's all right. We're going to get to the important stuff here anyway. So Robert Raikes is friends with Whitfield and the Wesley brothers. He had made a lot of other friends. In 1773, which by this point he's been married for about 7 years, probably has a few children. He ends up having 10 children, he and his wife. So some of them have probably arrived by 1773. He goes with a man who has been his friend for his whole life, a guy named John Howard. And John Howard had become really committed and really had a burden for fixing the prison system in England. He just saw it as a disaster. He saw lots of people in prison who he thought really had no business being there. They were there for small debts that they just couldn't pay. Maybe had been long imprisoned for petty crimes like stealing groceries because they were hungry. And he thought there really should be some better ways. And they would be thrown right in the same rooms with the murderers and the violent robber types. And he was really frustrated that when you went here, it was just one room. Everybody was essentially in the same spot. Men, women, children. Babies were being born in this space. Some of these women would come in expecting and deliver their babies in while they were there in these conditions. The jail did not provide really anything. If they were going to have food or clothing, somebody from outside had to provide it for them. They just couldn't leave. So, well, you know, they were there because they were trying to steal food. Now you've taken away the breadwinner too. So now the family has absolutely nothing. This guy's got nobody to provide anything for him. So eventually, you know, the kids turn to stealing. They end up in prison. Everybody's in prison and nobody's on the outside to try to give them food. It's just, it's a terrible disaster. John Howard takes Robert in with him to go visit the Gloucester jail. This isn't even actually London. This is their smaller town. It's a bustling big town, but it's not like London. He goes in and he sees this, and Robert says, you know, something's got to be done. So he starts regularly putting editorials in his paper talking about these conditions, appealing to people if they had means, like, can you bring some clothes? Can you bring some food? Can you bring clean water? Can you do something? Can you pay off somebody's small debt so they can get out, so they can go back to work and take care of their family? If there's anything you can do, you should be doing it. And he's not just appealing, he's actually actively contributing to these efforts himself. But he starts really wondering. He actually tries to get some people out, and then he says, you know, if they were educated, they could maybe have access to better jobs, make a living that could, maybe they'd never get into even the middle class, but they might at least be able to pay their bills. And he saw the ability to read and write and do basic math, basically those three, as maybe a key. But he would get people out, but they're now so so mentally oppressed by this, they just don't see any other way, and so it's not successful. He just really does not have any success trying to bring adults out and help them. And he starts wondering if there's any way to just keep people from ever getting into the prison system. And so he goes and he happens to be walking through town on a random day, and he sees some kids, and they're just causing a ruckus, swearing, fighting, just kind of being generally miscreants. And there's a local person, he's walking through, this is one of the poorer areas of town, and there's somebody, an adult, standing there. He says, what's up with this? What's going on here? And they say, oh, you think that's bad? You should come on a Sunday. That's the one day that all the kids are actually free. Most of the kids aren't here because they're working in the factories. But on Sunday, all the factories are shut down. And then they're just, it's wild. The chaos that goes on down here. And he says, this is not good. But maybe there's a way, if they're all free on Sunday and they're causing trouble, if I could occupy their time on Sunday with training specifically, he's thinking, if I can use the Bible and the catechism to teach them, I could maybe catch some of them and teach them writing, teach them reading, and teach them morals. Those three. Expose them to Christianity, because since they work all the time and they're filthy, they don't go to church either. So they have no exposure to any of those things, and their parents don't. And so he makes his first attempt. Well, actually, there was another thing that had happened too, and that had played into this, is the only way you could start a school was by subscribing to the entirety of the doctrine of the Anglican Church. So the people who would have cared, the dissenters, the Methodists, those who would have cared to try to start schools and take care of these kids, they couldn't, because then they'd have had to agree to let the Anglican Church rule their whole system, and they wouldn't do that. In 1779, Parliament passed an act called the Enabling Act that repealed that. And it said that anybody who wanted to start a school could start a school. And I never found anything to say that Robert consciously thought about that. It may have just been a providential side note that made it possible for him to do this. I don't know that it was rattling around in his head. Oh yeah, the Enabling Act got passed. Now I can educate these kids. I think it just kind of all coincided. And so he goes and he decides he's going to try. And so he goes to what to him seems like the logical place. He gathers a group of kids into the courtyard at St. Mary de Crypt Church. And he starts through the catechism with them, which is an utter disaster. They have no interest. They have no reason for being there. They wander in and out and don't pay any attention. Yes?
How old were the kids? I feel so sorry for them.
Yeah. You know, I didn't find ages. I would say the oldest ones were probably 14, and the youngest could have been probably as young as 5. You know, their mom and dad were working all the time. As soon as they were able to do anything, they were sent to work, most of them as well. So kids as young as 5 or 6 years old working in the factories. It's a bad situation, and makes a person feel sorry for him. So he has his attempt in the courtyard. And the kids don't even see a value in it. So he tries again. He hires a gal. He actually pays her, I have no idea how much this is worth, but he pays her a shilling a week for her to, or I should say a shilling a Sunday. He'd give her 1 shilling if she would gather some kids, and he even helped her. He gathered in some kids to her house, and if she would just teach them to read and write, and that's kind of the extent of his thing. Here, use the Bible, just teach them the letters out of the Bible, teach them to form the letters, teach them to copy down the Bible. They tried, it didn't work, again, in part because she doesn't have, I don't quite know how to say that, she's not an aggressive enough person to put up with the difficult and rough nature of the boys that she inherited in this project. She just didn't know how to handle them. And she didn't really have any guidance either. I mean, this idea, okay, well, you can write and you can read, so teach them how to do it, and I want you to use the Bible as your textbook. So she tries. He actually goes then and he says, okay, well, I kind of got this one started over there, one neighborhood over. It's actually closer to St. Mary Decrypt Church. There's another gal I've found, and so he pays her the same shilling a week to do the same, only she's got whatever it was to be able to control this behavior, get the kids to come in, sit, pay attention. She was able to do it. So she begins to experience some success. Eventually, within fairly short order, probably within a few months, he actually brings in all the kids from the other school. So says, you know what, thanks for trying, thanks for working at it, it's all right. Moves the kids over to this other gal, Mrs. Critchley. And she begins to be successful. They start to learn some lessons. They start to, and by they, I mean Robert and Mrs. Critchley, they begin to figure out how to make this system work and what this should look like. A big part of that is Robert had come to the conclusion the parents worked such long hours and were so tired. The kids were basically raising themselves. The parents had no time to do any form of discipline, had given up on it, and many didn't even have any concept of disciplining their children at all. So he would kind of hover around, and if a kid was causing trouble, he would, as forcibly as necessary, make them walk home, inform the parents what had happened, and instruct them on how to discipline the child, and then wait until they did it. And then he would take the kid back to school. And he developed this reputation of how he handled this discipline system, so that eventually the kids are going, well, if I mess up, Mr. Rakes is going to walk me home. I'm going to get my bottom paddled, and then I'm going to get brought back to school anyway, so I might as well just stay here. The parents had really kind of, for whatever reason, whether it was because it kept the kids occupied, they didn't have to worry about them getting in, you know, arrested or beat up, or if they actually saw the value in the education, I found no notes about that, probably some combination of all of those things. The parents seem to have bought into this. One story I heard, or read, rather, was that some of them would actually tie logs, like ankle weights, to their kids that didn't want to go to school, and then the parents would march them to school and make them stay at school with these weights tied on their ankles so they couldn't run off.
Oh, my
word. Yeah.
Brian, that's how they do it at Waffle High.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's like our first day
training. How to tie the logs on.
Have to have those on there.
Yeah, you know, so we chuckle about that because we'd get in trouble if we did that to a kid today, right?
Just a little.
Just a little. But at this point in time, you got to remember, the authorities didn't care one little bit what happened to these kids. The only thought, if they gave any thought to this system at all, was maybe it'll keep them out of prison and we just don't have to deal with them. So if tying logs to their ankles kept the constabulary from having to deal with these kids, they were perfectly fine with it. So situations have changed drastically.
Was there other education happening Monday through Friday? Or you mentioned working in factories, or I'm also trying to square this with like industrialization. And
yeah, no, good thought. If you went to school, it was private school. There were no public schools at all.
So in private school, would have been like middle class folk?
You would have had to have been able to afford the tuition, possibly the materials. Mm-hmm. So. You know, you see, as you would look back through history, somebody went to this school and it was sort of okay. Well, that's because that's the best one they could afford.
Sure.
So somebody else got to go to a better school. A better school had, you know, better teachers generally, better facilities, better materials and such. There was no educational system in terms of a system. There just wasn't one.
Yeah. I think it's worth noting too that it sounds bad that the dads and the moms and the kids all had to work, but that's what life had been since the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's just that now actually they were being paid for it, whereas before they just ate.
Yeah.
You know, that's all they could get from it, but now they were being paid. So we can talk about how horrible, you know, the sweatshops and all that work was, but they saw it as a great improvement on, in many ways, from just subsistence farming.
Yeah. I'm sure it would just depend on which person you asked that question to. Some might have chosen to go back just to be out of the slums.
Possibly, but they were still making more money than they had ever made before.
Yeah.
The countryside, I mean, from our perspective, the countryside would be more pleasant.
Their circumstances before certainly weren't great. It's not like they went from a really good situation to a terrible one. They went from a moderate to okay situation to basically the same situation with a different set of circumstances, maybe, where they made more money, but now they're living in these cramped conditions with, but, you know, what was their hygiene like at home? Well, carrying water from a well, maybe from a bucket. You know, the only benefit they probably had there was being more spread out, and so diseases didn't pass quite as quickly, and the sewage didn't build up so bad.
Some of those kids accept Christ. Do you know?
Yeah. Well, let's pursue that thought. So as they went, they developed their system. And it came around with a group of basically four important ideals. They wanted to make sure the kids were punctual, that they were courteous, that they had hygiene, and that they put in the effort. And so eventually you see things like people whose job it was to determine if the kids had completed this stage. They didn't care how old the kid was like we do here, which we could debate that, and it's not really related. But I sat in a in-service training one time where the guys actually said, you know, what determines is the most significant aspect that determines the grade that a kid is in. And we're all sitting there going, a bunch of educators scratching our heads, thinking of all the important things that we've learned. And he puts his slide up, and it's a birthday cake with candles on it. He says the number of candles on their birthday cake is the most significant thing that determines what grade a kid is in, in the system. So at least here, I didn't even find anything about grades exactly, but they just said, we have this primer that we're going to use. When you've completed all the lessons to the satisfaction of the teacher, you can try the next one. So that's kind of where that effort piece comes in. They were motivated. Eventually, we even see some of the kids move through that far enough that they begin teaching the students who are one or two levels behind them. Like, I've already mastered that one. I can help you work through those lessons. And so they work through some of that. The schedule. So they had I mentioned punctuality. They had a definite schedule.
Okay.
And this will start to connect to your question. So they started at 10 o'clock in the morning. Kind of depended a little bit on which school you went to, but roughly at 10 o'clock in the morning. They took a one-hour break from noon to 1 for lunch. Then the kids were supposed to be back at school at 1 o'clock, and they would go through till 4. At 4, they would take a recess, which amounted to the teacher would walk them to the nearest church where they would attend a church service, something the kids had largely not been doing up to this point ever. And then at 5:30, they were sent home with the instruction to just go straight home. Don't get lost on the street someplace, just go home. So they begin to get exposed, and don't forget too, that their primary text was the Bible. The next one down was the catechism. That's the two things. So they were taught directly passages from the Bible, and then they were taught what we would consider Christian doctrine. I did not ever find a specific, like, this is how often kids were changed and had their lives changed. This is how often kids became to consider themselves Christians. But many, many, many kids were introduced to the Bible, to church. And similarly, it's kind of funny maybe to talk about how Rakes handled the discipline. That I saw one description that described him as a very caring and affectionate father, a gregarious, they used the word gay, but in the old-fashioned term, a very well-liked, friendly person. Had a great relationship with his wife, had a great relationship with his children, and he actually developed good relationships with these kids. So he handled discipline when it needed handled, but I mean that's kind of important if you're going to have good relationships in this kind of structure. The kids who are not misbehaving need to know that the ones who are can expect discipline. The ones who are, a lot of times, are just trying to find out, is there a boundary? Do you care about me enough to actually set a boundary and hold me to it? There was a story I read in this course that he asked a little girl why more of her friends wouldn't come to school. You know, he wasn't out just grabbing anybody by the shirt collar and dragging them in. There was an invitation, and they were trying to just, we want you to come. We want to offer this to you. We want to give it to you. And the little girl says, well, they don't have clothes. My friends don't have nice enough clothes to come to school and especially to go to church. And he said, well, you leave the church to me. And if they will just wash their hands and faces and comb their hair, I'll be satisfied.
Did they feed them?
I didn't find anything especially about food. I would have to believe that there were definitely situations. Most of these were happening in somebody's kitchen. And I don't know exactly what that meant. I don't know if saying that it happened in their kitchen has the same idea that we have of a kitchen. Or if it just means that it was in some, not the normal living space of the house, or what exactly that means, if that's just where they had the table and so that's where they met. I have to believe that Rakes seems like a compassionate enough person that if he found out that a kid didn't actually, I know I had a quote that I misplaced where it, he was talking about how he bought clothes and he bought things. So he provided for material needs. I would have to believe that food was part of that. But it just depended on what he found out about this kid needs this. I have this. Let me share it with them. I would have to believe that carried over to the teachers as well and the other people who were working there. Their desire was to care for and make the lives better for these kids. So I would have to believe that food, clothing, possibly even shelter, maybe some kids that were otherwise homeless or abandoned were adopted. I just have to believe that a lot of that came about.
Like they would care for them even though they're not their children, but they love them anyways.
Yep. So there was a lot of development. Eventually, as they went through this, they developed what I guess the word might be a pedagogy. They developed a whole system, including textbooks that Rakes largely wrote himself or at least edited. He printed them because he had the facility as a printer. They produced them. The books were basically just copy books. So they would take the book and they would copy the lesson onto, whether they used paper or slate or something like that, they would copy the lesson out. But it was essentially all quotes either from the Bible or from the catechism. In a 3-year span, the people noted in Gloucester noticed a very remarkable difference in the chaos on Sunday mornings and on Sundays around Gloucester. And they basically attributed all of that to the effect of the school. So was that because the kids were occupied? I'm sure for some of them it was that the kids were occupied. Was it because hearts and lives were changed? Because they heard the gospel and they behaved and that changed the way they acted? I guess I would think that some of it came to that too. I did not find anybody directly to state that. But by, by 1784, we've got John Wesley attending, not as a student, obviously, but going to these schools. That's one page back. Here it is. So this is in 1784, or maybe even 1783. John Wesley wrote of one of the schools, "Before service, I stepped into the Sunday school, which contains 240 children. It's taught every Sunday by several masters and superintended by the curate. So many children in one parish are restrained from open sin and taught a little good manners, at least, as well as to read the Bible. I find these schools springing up wherever I go." Then in 1785, John Wesley again, noting the town of Leeds, says that they had actually banded together. They divided the town into 7 divisions. It had 26 schools containing above 2,000 scholars, taught by 45 teachers. And then at 3 p.m., they were taken to their respective churches, then conducted back to school. He also goes on to describe that there were 4 inquisitors who took attendance both in the morning and then in the evening, and then they would go and find where anybody who's missing, where are they? Are they sick? Are they missing? Are they still at home? What do they need to get them back to school? According to Robert Rakes, by 1785, he'd gone from his original dozen or so students to 250,000 in the schools that had sprung up out of this. All of them, and they all followed the same model, so all of them are connected to a church. And that seems to be one of the... I don't know that this directly relates to your question, Dayton, from earlier, but it's distinct about the schools that are descended from the first one that Rakes started, in that there were earlier Sunday schools that many people do not say Robert Rakes started Sunday schools, and he even wouldn't have said that he started them. But there were others that maybe they met on other days, or multiple days during the week, or they included other things besides the Bible and the catechism, whereas his school was entirely focused on the Bible. So exposing kids, I just want them to be able to read and write so that they can read the Bible. I want to expose them to church, and I want to teach them Christian doctrine. What they do with it from there, that's up to them. But that was distinct about his, where many others were much more, either they met on multiple days, they included math and science and other things that may have actually taken more precedent than the Bible itself. Whereas his primary focus was exposing the kids to Christianity and providing them the ability to read and write. So, and you know, John Wesley stands in favor of these. So his whole motivation seems to have been getting people to believe, to hear the gospel and believe it. He seemed to think that these schools played into that. Otherwise, he'd have been finding ways to condemn them. Many people have condemned Robert Rake, saying, why didn't you more aggressively present the gospel instead of just teaching them to read? And others have defended him, kind of saying, Wesley and the others were doing that part. He just added this other aspect that they couldn't add, which was now the kids have access, the kids, and by extension now the families, because if the kid can get a Bible and read it, and the whole family was illiterate, now they have at least one literate person in the family who could read it to them and share all of that. And they'll probably have literate children then after that. So it filtered on down. So kind of just winding up, where did it go? By the 50th anniversary, so the first school started in 1780. By 1830, at one point, the king and queen actually go through and meet Rakes. They invite him to come talk to them and explain what he's doing with the schools. Then they actually come back and they tour some of the schools. They want to come see what it is he's doing. So I don't know that that has much to do with the idea, with the gospel aspect, but they obviously saw it as changing and being significantly beneficial to the whole nation. And then on this 50th anniversary, a Lord Shaftesbury, I have no idea who that guy is. Do you know Lonnie? Is he anybody significant?
His first act.
Okay. Whoever he was, whatever his significance was, but he commissioned a statue of Rakes in honor of the effect of these schools. And by this point, 50 years after the first school started, in his speech, he estimated that there were 1.25 million students attending those schools at that time. So, and this is after 50 years, so literally millions of kids have passed through these schools in these 50 years. It did provide the foundation of what would turn into the public school system in England. You know, I think that's another issue. You could probably debate whether or not that's good or bad. So they took it over. So then the Sunday schools kind of stopped, and then it lost the focus. But yeah, I also didn't find any direct connection, although I think it's probably there. You know, we were talking about the DuPont family and the Sunday school that the one daughter started. No, many people here, there were still hostilities had ceased between, largely, at least open war had ceased between us in England, especially by 1830. The War of 1812 is over. We might not be friends, but we get along. There are people with connections on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean. So these things are filtering across to the Americas too, these ideas, and the Methodist connections were pretty strong. They would have carried these ideas through. So we see that coming through to here and used throughout here, people looking at that and teaching slaves until it was outlawed that they couldn't teach the African Americans. And some still did it anyway if they thought they could get away with it. So you see this these aspects not just... I think you could make that connection, whereas where it didn't just affect England, it affected here. It likely went through to India and those other places and affected other places as well.
It seems to me that it wouldn't be a problem that these schools became public schools, because I'm sure that they used the Bible and everything back then. I think the bigger problem is that the public schools became secular.
Right. That's what I was meaning, is that they eventually it lost the connection to the Bible and the catechism and that focus that he had of trying to expose kids to all of those things. So, the fact that they stayed literate and now maybe these people didn't have to focus their time on reading and writing, and they could, if they continued, hopefully they continued with just teaching doctrine and helping the kids grow in faith. So,
I'm so amazed how these people, at first they were working in a factory and then their mom and dad worked $100, but these people came to change children's lives, to teach them about the Bible and stuff. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I always think it's interesting too, these kind of guys that see a problem and they solve it, and then we kind of keep doing what they started doing. But how can we be people who don't just follow the pattern, but identify problems and solve them?
Right.
Right.
Well, and I was thinking of a quote that I cannot say where it comes from, but the idea is, don't despise the day of small beginnings.
Zechariah.
Is it Zechariah? Okay. So, he started with 12 kids. 50 years later, there's 1.25 million. There's a million times as many kids being impacted by what he started within a 50-year span. That probably didn't come about because of him. So I don't know that gives necessarily evidence of the effect of the gospel, but I think you could say that had to have been in part because of God working and promoting this himself.
In part.
In whole. I missed the mark by just a little.
I kind of missed
the mark.
You have to come to men's Bible study if you want to be on the inside.
Yes, I kind of missed the mark, and if you missed men's Bible study yesterday, you missed the whole joke. With that, let's conclude. But if you want to look up somebody else interesting and what he did, Robert Riggs. So, Father, we just want to pause and thank you for people who set examples for us and for others, who have seen where you've put them and seen the needs that you've placed in front of them, and instead of praying just that you would do something, they, like William Carey, they asked you to do something, and then they said, "What can I do? And what would you have me do?" And they started. So we thank you for them. We ask that you would teach us to do the same, that we would see a need, and that we would seek your will and seek your guidance, but that we would move forward and expect you to carry on your will. So we thank you, and we just praise you this morning. Amen.